Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host, Tony Black, and I'm delighted that we've got another interview today, as opposed to a traditional episode that we're covering. And I've got with me one of the current pioneers of the X-Files comic book scene. It's a good word, pioneers.
It is.
Matthew Dow Smith. Have I pronounced your name right there?
Matthew? Yeah, it's Matthew Dow Smith.
Matthew Dow Smith, I apologise.
Oh, that's close enough.
It's my British Midlands tones, unfortunately.
It's quite all right. It does not bother me.
Huge thank you for coming on the show.
No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
To talk about the X-Files comics that you're currently drawing and writing, actually, which includes the X-Files current main series run that Joe Harris is writing, and your X-Files Origins comic book, which is fresh out the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And is now everywhere. So, we're going to talk a little bit about that and your career and everything like that. So, before we do, I'm going to ask you the inaugural five questions of X.
Okay.
We'll gauge a little bit of your fandom. So,
I'm ready. I am prepared.
And as we talked about, you're battling an off air cold. So you've done even better coming on today to actually.
Yes. And there is no truth to the rumor that it is an alien virus. I got to say, though, Joe Harris got it, too. So it might be some sort of alien
virus. It's the black oil. Just the infecting your systems.
It really is. As long as it's not the alien virus at the end of the revival,
That's nasty.
That was really
I don't know how they're getting out of that one, but that's not good.
I wish they would tell us.
That was going to be one of my questions. Come on, tell us.
No, we'll get to that later.
Okay, so when, then, did you first discover the X-Files?
Well, I discovered it kind of the same as everybody else, in that, there was this newish network, Fox, and they were doing this new show that was weird. And, you know, I grew up as a Doctor Who fan and a Quatermass fan. And, you know, so you and I had actually, you know, I was probably the only kid in my high school who knew who Kolchak the Night Stalker was. I'm constantly surprised I wasn't beaten up more. But, you know, this show comes on and, of course, like, I am its target audience. So I watched it like everybody else. And, you know, I think like everybody else sort of at the time. And I, you know, when did it launch? 93. I was going to say it was 93, 94. I then moved to LA in the middle of all of that. But, you know, I kept watching it, I think, you know, pretty regularly. You know, this is before DVRs. I mean, we had videotape machines, but, you know, I was a professional artist living in Los Angeles. My videotape machine did not always work, and I did not always have cable. But I did follow it, you know, pretty regularly all through the first five seasons. And I went and I saw the movie when it was in the theaters. And I remember waiting in line in Burbank to see the movie and the huge poster on the side of the movie theater. And I had vivid memories of all that. But then I think, like a lot of other people, I drifted away a bit after the movie and kind of came back for the end to kind of see how they would all wrap up.
Yeah.
Which, not to get off on too much of a sidetrack, which is I actually now coming back to it, because of, you know, they hired me on to do the X-Files comic, and, you know, I take my job seriously. I watched a bunch of episodes. I love John Doggett. He's a great character.
He was so good, and it was a real shame they couldn't get him back for the revival series, actually.
Yeah, it really is.
He was, but at the time, people struggled, didn't they? Because it wasn't Mulder, and, you know.
Yeah, and I think I saw the episode. I think I saw his first episodes because it was a season ender and a season opener. And I think I saw the season opener and then was like, yeah, okay. It was fine, but, you know, I enjoyed it and everything. But, those last few seasons, I saw maybe an episode here and there, but I just didn't. I just wasn't following it as obsessively as I could, partly just because I was drawing comics full time and, you know, you don't have a whole lot of time for entertainment.
Well,
but anyways, I came to it literally like, you know, your average audience member in the 90s. You just, you know, everyone was talking about this thing and it sounded really cool. And you watched it and you're like, yeah, that's pretty cool. And I really enjoyed it.
You were there from the beginning, which is really good.
I was, yeah. I mean, I didn't see the pilot, but I think my first episode, what was my first episode? I must have been Ice.
Oh, that's a great
no.
one.
No, that wasn't my first episode. My first episode was the much maligned Ghost in the Machine.
Oh, dear.
I specifically remember. But I, you know, but at the time it was unlike anything else on television. And it, you know, it hit that sweet spot of the kind of material that I really, really like. I mean, it is Ghost in the Machine. It's just, you know, it's a good old fashioned sci-fi horror story. And then, you know, I came back the next week for Ice, and after Ice, you're just like, oh, that was awesome.
You're in, yeah.
You're in, so.
That's the one.
So, yeah, I was definitely, so I was pretty much there from season one.
In terms of episodes then, my second question with this is, what is your favorite episode of the series? Can you pinpoint one out that leaps out at you?
It's tough because, I mean, I'm a massive Doctor Who fan, so it's like asking someone who their favorite doctor is, and you know, and that's just like the worst possible question ever. You know, there are episodes I like more than others. The one that I like, in kind of thinking about what's my favorite episode, the one that I kind of keep coming back to is actually The Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man. It's the kind of story, like, you know, I've written a few licensed comics now, and usually when I am asked to pitch something for, say, a Doctor Who story or something, like, I like telling sideways stories. I like telling, like, weird Rashomon stories that, you know, challenge what you think is going on or focus on a different character, so you kind of get a different view on what's going on. And I thought that was a really interesting episode. But that's one I kind of keep coming back to. But you know, there are all the standard ones that everybody loves, and I love those too. And as you can tell from my opinion on Ghost in the Machine, I even love a few that other people hate. you know, but that's the one I really kind of come back to. And I actually think the Cigarette Smoking Man, particularly in the first five seasons, was a really interesting character. And I always liked the idea, and I think this maybe got a little more complicated as the show went past season five, but the idea of he thinks he's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Which I find really interesting. And I think it's a lot of, you know, screenwriters and, you know, other writers I know always talk about, oh, you know, the villain thinks they're the hero. And it's like, I get that. I mean, I can't argue with that, but I do like an old fashioned villain who just wants to mess stuff up. but you know, this is a case I think where it really was interesting. Like, he really thought that what he was doing was for the best of everybody. You know, and I thought that actually made him more dangerous. So it's like, there are a lot of reasons I like that episode. I really like it because they didn't kill Frohickey.
Yeah, that would have been a terrible, terrible decision.
I would have been really upset about that. That's all I'm saying.
It was a bad enough decision that they killed them off anyway.
We're not talking about that. We're not talking about that. I did not see that episode when it aired, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
You know, I heard that they had killed them, and I was not happy. But then we get to bring him back, but we'll probably talk about that
later. Oh, yeah, we will. Yeah. Moving on, just in terms of favorites, what would you say your favorite season of The X-Files would be then, if you did watch for a fair few years?
Well, that's another really tough one. I mean, you know, obviously I saw the first five seasons as they aired. So, you know, I really like the first season a lot, but for kind of a weird reason. I kind of like the fact that in the first season they didn't quite know what they were doing yet. And it was kind of interesting to see them figure it out and figure out what the show could be. And then sort of slowly over the course of the season, they get a little more daring, which I thought was really interesting. But then, you know, like seasons three and four are where they really hit their stride and they're like, we know what the show is. And they start, you know, playing with the humor a little bit. And then they start bringing in other viewpoints. I can't remember what season The Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man was. It might be three.
That's four.
Four, yeah. So, you know, they started being a little more adventurous in terms of the viewpoints they were going to do. Like, I love all that stuff. I just think that's cool.
It is really good, yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, you know, I will always have a fondness for season one. And I, you know, there's the ongoing, you know, what do you like better, the myth arc stories or the one-off stories? And I think, obviously, season one is more one-off stories, but I like the way they were sort of slowly introducing the elements of the conspiracy. I thought the balance was interesting. And, You know, but seasons three and four, I thought they balanced all of it really, really well. But Carter says this all the time, and the other writers on the show have always said this, is the great thing about The X-Files is how pliable it is. And I like the seasons, and I think pretty much from season three on, they were always trying to experiment with other ways of doing things. And I love that. You know, I do find that really, both as a creative person, as an audience member, I just find that really entertaining.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about how you're a massive Doctor Who fan. And I think one of the beauties of that show as well, I mean, I love Doctor Who as well. And one of the beauties of that show is that, yeah, that's another show, much like The X-Files, that can break format and can do all kinds of different genres.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they make it work. And it is great when a show has that elasticity, isn't it? And The X-Files was a great example of that.
Well, but you have that other thing with Doctor Who where, you know, you bring in a new doctor, you bring in a new team, and it's a different show. And yet it's the same show, which is really interesting. You know, but talking about Doggett, bringing in Doggett, and then eventually bringing in Reyes, that was an opportunity, too, to make it a different show. And I think they struggled a little bit trying to figure out, you know, how to approach it. But from what I've seen, you know, now later, it certainly seems like they have. They had, you know, created sort of a slightly different feel for the show. So, anyways, yeah, it's a very pliable concept, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's one of the beauties of it, isn't it? We may have covered this question earlier, but who would you say your favorite character in the show is?
If you're going to think I'm going to say Frohickey. No, my favorite character is very predictable, which is Scully. I think Scully is probably, and it's, I always sound so pretentious when I say this, I genuinely think she is one of the most important female characters ever put on television.
I would agree. I don't think that's pretentious at all. I would agree.
Well, you can't see me wearing my black beret when I say it. Chain smoking gal was.
Yeah, obviously.
But, you know, I do. I think she's an incredibly important character. I think she's an incredibly interesting character. Now, but if we're going to go beyond, like, the main cast, it's the Lone Gunman, all three of them. I mean, without question. But, you know, Scully is the character I found interesting as a viewer and now as somebody, you know, involved in the comic book side of things. Like, nothing against Mulder. He's actually a lot of fun to draw, you know, but I think Scully, I respond more to Scully and the things that Scully is dealing with and sort of the tensions within her own sort of belief system.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we, in our last interview, we spoke to Denton Tipton, obviously, who edits the X-Files comics, and he was talking about how you wanted to write, in Origins, you wanted to write the Scully story.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a conscious thing in that Jody did Mulder and you did Scully. Is that right?
Yeah, well, there was a real worry, and I'm sure we'll get to this later, but there was a real worry once we brought in Jody that, you know, it would be very logical to put Jody Hauser, who's an incredible writer and a woman, have her write the Scully book. It just sort of made sense. So I was actually a little upset about it. And then Jody was like, oh, no, I want to write the Mulder one. I'm like, oh, yes. So I got to do the Scully one.
You got the chance, yeah.
Yeah, which was great. Because, I mean, that really, you know, she's the character. You know, there's obviously a lot of things about Mulder that I find interesting, too, or else we wouldn't have come up with this whole story. But, you know, Scully's the one that really personally really speaks to me. And she's a lot of fun to draw. The likeness is rough, but very, very difficult to capture the essence of her face. But her hair is so much fun to draw.
Well, yeah, we will get more into your Scully in Origins later. But yeah, she's a fantastic character. There's no getting away from that. Finally, then, of the five questions of X, if you could pinpoint a moment in the series that you would say is your favorite, a scene, a line, anything like that, what would it be?
I mean, again, it's really difficult, but yeah, I mean, the one that I like the most, or at least the one that I kind of come back to, and maybe it's because of working on the Scully Origins thing, but I think there are sort of two moments from the show that I think once you've read the Scully Origins story, you'll see I clearly was influenced by them. Is there's that great moment in One Breath with the nurse, where, you know, the nurse doesn't really exist, which I love that moment. And what I love about it in particular is the implications of that moment, and they're never really answered without it really being a problem. But the sort of, you know, the idea of someone looking out for her, and I don't know, I found that really interesting. And, you know, even at the time of seeing the episode when it originally aired, I thought that was really kind of cool. So that was a moment that I was definitely thinking about while we were building the story for Origins. And then just the moment of her waking up on her couch and her dad sitting there in
Beyond the Sea.
Beyond the Sea, thank you. Okay. Not Beneath the Sea. It was Something the Sea.
That's the sequel.
That was the sequel. Voyage Beneath the Sea. You know, that moment of him sitting there saying something and her not being able to hear him. It's like, it's such a great creepy moment. Yeah. And yet it's not creepy.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's her dad and sort of the tensions of that moment, I thought were really interesting. It's something in my personal project that I do, the October Girl. Like, those are the kind of moments that I try to sort of create in my own work. Cause I find them interesting. So there's like hundreds of thousands of moments in this show.
Yeah, I know.
And many of them are really interesting, but those in particular of late, like I came back to both of those a lot while building the story for Origins.
Yeah, those are some great moments. One Breath In as a whole is a phenomenal episode, and we've we've already recorded the podcast on that, actually, coming up in season two. Ooh. And it's our longest one yet because there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in that episode. Yeah. It's really interesting. I think, isn't it the first time that they trade roles where she's not the skeptic? Is that Beyond the Sea where they do the switch there? I don't know, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm getting over a head cold.
You're right. Beyond the Sea, yeah, it is. She's the one who believes that Luther Lee Boggs, the killer, is actually, you know, psychic, and Mulder's the one going, well, that's rubbish. And it's fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. It's a great episode altogether. So, no, fantastic choices there. So, yeah, thank you. That's some great answers questions of X there. Thank you. That gives us a gauge of your excellent X-Files fandom and your excellent knowledge, which makes sense given your contribution to the X-Files as a whole, really. But before we get there, I wanted to ask you, firstly, what was your journey then to becoming a comic book artist? Where did it begin and what happened?
Well, I'd always drawn comics as a kid, and I'd always been able to draw. I was really into Legion of Superheroes, a DC book. And I actually, it's a funny story, this weekend where I was in Baltimore Comic Con and came back with the alien virus. I finally met. So when I was a kid, I learned how to draw by copying drawings out of Legion of Superheroes. And they were drawn by a guy named Keith Giffen. And I met Keith for the first time this weekend and managed not to get complete nerd all over him. That's what I did for fun as a kid. I would copy drawings out of comic books. And then I kind of drifted away from comic books in high school. But then when I was in college, I was reintroduced to, I think it was the first year of the Sandman comic. It was the first year of, Doom Patrol. There was this whole resurgence in the American comic book industry. We call it the British Invasion, because you had three or four British comic book writers who took the medium seriously and did some really interesting things. So you had Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore, and Grant Morrison. Were kind of the big ones. But there was a comic called Moonshadow, which is by J.M. DeMatteis, who's now a friend of mine. But someone had shown me this comic, and, you know, I was looking at it and going, oh, comic books can be this too. And, you know, it was deep. It was had a lot of really interesting thoughts going on. And so I kind of, in the middle of, I think must have been my freshman year of college, was like, well, I want to do comics. And it was all downhill from there. I was a theater major. I switched over to being an art major. But the funny thing is, I actually didn't want to be a comic book artist. I wanted to be a comic book writer. But I could kind of draw because I'd been drawing all the time as a kid. And when I got out of college, I started writing and drawing things at a small publisher called Caliber, which also launched Brian Michael Bendis and David Mack and guys like Phil Hester and Guy Davis. I mean, it launched a lot of big guys, Mike Avon Oeming, Michael Gatos, who was one of the co-creators of Jessica Jones. I mean, you know, there was this great sort of, I would say, graduating class of comic book creators who came out of this. And I sort of followed in the tail. I followed in the slipstream behind those guys to mediocre greatness.
I disagree, but there you go.
Well, you know, but I then in the middle, you know, X-Files actually premiered in the middle of all this. I moved to LA, started working for Disney. And I basically, you know, it's kind of a fun story for comic book creators. I don't know about X-Files fans, but comic book creators. So I had done my first comic book and I was very proud of it. I thought I was, you know, hot stuff. And there was this like mass signing at a store near me in Burbank. And I went to it and it was all these amazing comic book creators, James Robinson, Steve Siegel, Gil Kane, Frank Miller, the Hernandez brothers. You know, it was just like, and then there was me with my one little small press comic. But I had ended up meeting all these amazing creators, and James Robinson called me like a week or two later and said, you know, the fill-in artist on this issue of Starman, which was my favorite comic book at the time, dropped out. Can you draw it and can you start now? And suddenly I was drawing an issue of my favorite comic book at DC. But it was just one of those completely bizarre, random things that happened. And then, yeah, it's just been kind of this slow, sort of strange career as a comic book artist ever since. And, you know, it's like most comic book creators, if you're not, you know, if you don't become like a huge superstar, you know, you're just kind of bouncing from title to title. And I think I've been luckier than most in that, like, people keep asking me to come back and do other stuff. So, so I've actually been doing it. I think it's been 23 years now. I've been doing it, professionally 23 years. And, I'm busier now than ever. I think in no small part because of things like X-Files.
Well, you've covered quite a few different properties, haven't you? Different genres and things like that. And you've obviously drawn Doctor Who. And
yeah, that, for a long time.
As a mega fan, that must have been an amazing experience, drawing Doctor Who.
It was very bizarre. The hard part is that I was a major fan and nothing I did was ever good enough because, you know, this is like, it is without question, it's my special nerdy thing. I am, you know, defined by the fact that I'm a Doctor Who fan. There are multiple TARDISes in my office.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. So, and one of them signed by Sylvester McCoy, but you know.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Prized possession. You know, so, but you're working on, when you work on a property that you really, really love like that, you know, it's hard because you care so much and you kind of, there's a point at which you kind of have to step back and say, it's just a job and you have to treat it like a job and you just have to get the work done. And when it's something like that, that's so personal to you, you know, it really can be kind of tough. And I know there have been points where Denton, like I would redraw the first few pages of every issue like four or five times. And Denton, who edited me on Doctor Who, would basically be like, I don't care, just send me the latest one you did. And, you know, but that's true. It's like, you know, yeah, that's great. I know you want it to look great, but, you know, a finished one would be better. You know, and then you know, you kind of go, I don't chase characters like Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman, but there was this weird year a couple years ago where I actually drew Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman all in one year.
Oh, fantastic.
And there was a point in each one of those projects where I had to sort of step back and say, okay, I'm not drawing a Superman story, I'm drawing a story. And you just have to do it. And, you know, because it's a lot of, you put a lot of sort of emotional pressure on yourself to be good because it's important.
Yeah. And it's characters that are so recognized and beloved and everything like that. Yeah. It must be difficult. So how did the job working on the X-Files season 10 come about then? Because obviously after the, before the revival series, I should say, Joe Harris and Chris Carter launched what was at that point the continuation in comic form of the show after I Want to Believe, the second movie. And there were multiple artists coming onto it. But Pilgrims was your first story, I think, wasn't it, on there that you drew?
It was. I mean, the funny thing is, it's not my first encounter with the X-Files.
Okay.
When I was working, I was doing a Supernatural TV show comic at Wildstorm, which is DC, one of DC's imprints, which is sadly no longer with us. But they brought me in to do the Supernatural thing, and the editor there is a good friend of mine I'd worked with on Hellboy years before. And, you know, when the second movie came along, they did a comic, and they had me try out for it. And I didn't get the job. And I was very bitter about it. I was very upset about it. And then I went off and did Doctor Who, which is fine. I mean, as far as consolation prizes go.
Well, yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. And then it came up again after IDW gave up the Doctor Who license and it went to Titan. The woman I was dating at the time, and who is now my wife, is actually like the biggest X-Files fan I know.
Oh, right. Really?
Yeah. And, you know, Denton and I were kind of talking about it as friends, and my editor saying, you know, I'd love to be able to come in and do like, you know, a fill-in issue or something. And so Denton had me do just some samples to send to Fox. And, you know, I told my now wife, you know, oh, you know, maybe nothing will happen, but wouldn't it be cool if I got to do an X-Files thing? And she was all excited. And then it took a while, like maybe a month or two later, I get a call from Denton saying, hey, you know, do you have time to talk about X-Files now? I'm like, oh yeah. And there's a moment like in the middle of the conversation where I realized, we're not talking about me just doing an issue, are we? You're talking about me taking over the book. And I, of course, immediately agreed.
Yeah.
And wandered into the other room to tell Abby. And I had just like wonderful, fun little geek moment. I'm going to be drawing the X-Files, which is great. So like, yeah. I got to be way cooler. And there's no truth to the rumor that that's why she married me.
Of course not.
Yeah, no.
The very idea.
Yeah, Denton unfortunately knows that I can never quit the book. but yeah, so, you know, it was just random. I mean, I had kind of expressed an interest in it. I mean, it's, you know, because it's a job and, you know, I like the X-Files. It certainly suits the way I draw because I draw kind of what I call in a wonky way. I mean, I don't have a style that is natural to superheroes. I have a style that's natural to people in normal clothes, and I use a lot of shadows, and I like more atmospheric stuff. So, you know, things like Doctor Who or things like X-Files or things like the show Supernatural, doing comics of these things, like, it actually kind of suits what I do really well, if I say so myself. And, you know, and so it's when little things like this come along, it's kind of fun to be a part of it. And the thing that I really liked about the IDW approach, which is the same reasons I agreed to do Doctor Who and Supernatural, is that the companies, they took the material seriously. Like, we're not just making let's make a quick, cheap knockoff to make some money, you know, based on a popular thing. It's, you know, they really wanted to make a good comic book based on established shows. You know, which when I was a kid, you know, they did Battlestar Galactica comics and Star Wars, and, you know, it wasn't always clear whether the companies were really taking it that seriously. But that seems to have changed recently. So I think it's, you know, it's a whole new canvas for guys like me who don't draw superheroes normally to get to do really interesting material. And it's literally, it's like, you know, every time they end a season, there's that sort of awkward conversation. It's like, I don't want to like beg Denton to stay around for another year, but you know, he calls me up and says, well, excuse me, this is what we're thinking. And I go, that sounds good to me.
but that's the thing. I think that there's several things that leap out about season 10 and season 11 and the, you know, the Joe Harris run of those things. And then Origins is that you really feel as a reader that you guys know this stuff really well, and that it's not just something thrown out there. There's a lot of love and care and attention put into it. I mean, one thing I said in my review that I noticed about Origins, and we will talk about Origins later, is even to the point of putting in "Don't Look Any Further," the song, which in the Scully bit, which is a link to the season 7 episode Horizon. And I got that as a fan, and I was I was like, "Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool." I did a little giddy thing there because
I love that. Yeah.
It's a great, but that's the something if you didn't know the show as well as a writer, I don't think that you would know to put that stuff in. It's a real reward for fans to actually read that
stuff. Well, yeah. And I mean, that's what it's meant to be. I mean, You know, there's always that question. You find it particularly writing Doctor Who stories. There's that constant sort of tension between, you know, are you telling you a story for, you know, to tell a good story, or are you telling a story just for fan service? And so we wanted to have those moments that were like, no, you know, we're fans too. but also, you know, that aren't going to interrupt the flow. And it's funny because we wanted to use actual lyrics from the song, but that starts getting complicated because you have to license the song and stuff. So I had to work very hard to make sure we could get the reference in without it causing any legal problems. And I mean, that, as far as I'm concerned, that's my job.
yeah. But it worked, it had the effect, which is great, really. That, like you say, that's the real reward of these kind of comics, in that they feel that way. But with season 11, the Joe Harris season 11 that you drew, was that obviously was, and we talked a little bit about this with Denton before, obviously that was truncated because of the revival series, and then you shifted on to doing the now monthly comic that keeps coming out, which is set in the revival timeline. Was that a difficult process? Because I know season 11 was meant to last a lot longer, wasn't it? Was it difficult to shift gears?
Well, I mean, it was easy for me because I just draw what Joe sends me. You know, but, you know, it was one of those things. Once we sort of figured out what the shape of it was going to be, once we knew that Chris Carter was going to kind of step away from what we had established, you know, there was a moment of, to be honest, disappointment. But also, you know, it's Chris's show. If he can... I love how I just call him Chris. Chris. it's Chris Carter. Show. I've never met the man. I can't call him by his first name.
You know, I think we all do it, though.
I know. Well, it's like, you know, Doctor Who fans, Steven, you know, whatever. Mr. Moffat.
You've got more of a reason, though, given you've been involved in drawing these things. I think you're allowed.
I know, but it makes me seem much more tied into the process than I really am. But, you know, it's Chris Carter's show, and, you know, he can do whatever he wants with it. And it's our job on the comic book side to take what he's doing and try to add to it. And, you know, so it shifted. What he was doing changed, so that changed what we had to do. You know, it's funny because, I mean, I did say when it happened, you know, that I'm glad I wasn't writing it, because that would have been a really hard shift to make. But Joe did this. I know the original ending, and I'm not going to give away the original ending.
Yeah.
But Joe had to, he took that original ending and he shifted it a little bit so that it would work in this truncated form. And I mean, I would never tell him this, but I actually like the new ending more.
Oh, wow.
It added another little layer of what Gibson's plan was. That I thought was phenomenal. And, you know, we're not kidding. We all got the script and we were all kind of tearing up at the end of reading the script. And there was a little email that went around where we all went, you know, sniff, sniff. Because it really, I thought it was a really difficult thing to do. And I personally think he nailed it. The different timelines and stuff, none of that was in there. And the inclusion of it, even though, you know, fans don't always react real well to that, I thought he handled it really, really well. You know, so big props to Joe Harris for, you know, taking what would have been just a completely debilitating situation for me as a writer and, you know, turning it into something sort of new and special. You know, and the funny thing is, like, I kind of want to go back to that timeline now. Because I mean, there are certain things about that we kind of had to leave hanging that would be kind of fun to go back and tell more stories in that timeline. But, you know, I think he wrapped it up really interestingly, and it was sort of surprisingly poignant when it didn't necessarily have to be poignant at all. could have just been like, here's the end of the story, let's move on.
Yeah, so. I think it's because I'm guessing it's because you'd created, you'd really sort of reinvented a lot of the stuff in the show, and you'd brought a lot of people back, and it really started to feel like the show of the old days, actually, in many respects, with a lot of the stories you were telling. And I think maybe, yeah, I think a lot of fans would have felt the same, a very similar kind of emotions, really. But in terms of drawing the new series, mm-hmm. are you enjoying that process as it goes now?
I am, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of fun. The stories have to be different, and the tone of them is different. And I try to draw them a little bit differently to match closer to what they did on the revival. But, as stupid as it sounds, like, we sort of have our own shorthand now. So we just are kind of still doing what we did, but everybody's hair is different.
Yeah.
Because it has to look like their hair from the revival.
Yeah.
And Skinner's beard is killing me because I hate drawing beards is hard. And I love, I love having Skinner in there because I love Skinner as a character. But yeah, the beard. He looks great. Just I have to draw it. But it's kind of just superficial stuff like that. We're still doing what we're doing, and Joe certainly, shifted his narrative approach a little bit to sort of have it be closer to how they approach the revival. But really, it's not changing what we do tremendously. We've got a really cool new myth arc. I still don't know who the bad guy is of the new season. Joe asked me if I wanted to know, and I'm like, maybe not.
Yeah, because the myth arc starts this month, I think, because we've just had Ishmael.
Yeah, next month.
It starts this month. So yeah, I think everyone's really excited to see what's going to happen with this new story.
Well, the myth arc started in issue one. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Hint, hint.
I don't know where it's going. I don't know what's going on. Joe doesn't tell me anything. I get the scripts, and I think particularly in season 11, Joe likes there to be one moment in every sort of story arc where I can kind of turn to my wife and say, Gibson Praise is coming back. And have her go, so he likes to have, but I don't know what that moment's going to be for the one I'm drawing now, which is the first issue of that comes out next month. So we'll see.
It's exciting. It's very exciting. But for you, obviously, you talked earlier about being glad to some extent you weren't the writer in having to juggle all this. So
yeah,
for obviously X-Files Origins, which has just dropped in the first issue, even though it's been over the month of August with the different chapters and everything like that. But we had the collected issue at the end of the month. You've obviously, as we said earlier, you've written this series with Jodie Hauser. So, and you talked earlier, as you say, about originally wanting to be a writer. How has this experience been for you then in terms of starting something from scratch and building it in that way?
It's interesting. I mean, we're not really starting from scratch because I think when Dent and I first started talking about it, we both knew that there were moments in their young lives that were important.
Yeah.
And that those had already been established, and that it would be very easy for us to just go in and take those moments and then try to build a story around them. I write weird. Everybody says, don't figure out what your themes are until you're done, and then you go back and rewrite to bring out the themes, which is very, very boring, but that's what writing teachers tell you. I write theme first. I figure out what the theme of the story is, and then I build a story around the theme that I want to explore. And it's very easy with Scully. You're dealing particularly in X-Files Origins. So if for listeners who don't know, X-Files Origins picks up when they're both 13. So it's, Mulder in 1973, he's 13 years old on Martha's Vineyard, and Scully takes place in 1977, and she's 13 years old in San Diego. And the Scully part of the story is based around the moment where her Sunday school teacher is killed in his front yard. And it's a random killing, but it was, a deeply profound moment that Scully mentions in the show, and that she says, made her question things about her own faith, about, the nature of evil in particular. So, not only do we have, an inciting moment the death of her Sunday school teacher, we already have the inciting theme, which is a challenge to her faith and to her questioning the nature of evil. So, you know, yeah, this wasn't hard. The fun part was sitting down, and I don't know how much of the story Denton has told, but, you know, he had called and said, you know, we're thinking about doing this. Would you pitch a Scully story? And I very quickly, I think overnight, came up with sort of a outline of a Scully story based around the death of her Sunday school teacher. And, you know, they liked it. And then said, yeah, this is really great, but could you do a Mulder story instead? And I was just crushed. And so I'm like, you know, okay, you know, because I'm always looking for opportunities to write more. And so I went for a walk, and I walked to a grocery store, got some things. By the time I was home, I had a Mulder story and a way to tie it into the Scully story and have them both kind of be the same story. Mm. And I pitched it to Denton, and Denton's like, that's actually really good. And after a long process of, you know, showing it around and having, you know, Fox and everybody sign off on it, that's what we got to do. And then because you can't have the main artist on your X-Files book writing two books right at the same time, we brought in Jodi to help with the writing and to add her own sort of spin on things. And it's been absolutely fabulous. But it was not a difficult process. I mean, I had the Scully story, you know, almost instantly. And that Mulder story and sort of the larger tapestry of both stories I had in about 15 minutes. And right. And, you know, the more we sort of work on it and break it into individual chapters and then into issues, and it's still holding up fine. So I don't know what happened, but, you know, it was one of the easiest things plot wise, that's ever come together. My book, the October Girl, that I write and draw myself, that took 20 years.
Wow.
That took 20 years to build to the story that I'm telling now. And, you know, these both took a combined maybe 2 hours to come up with. So I like these projects a lot. Yeah. They're a lot easier. But yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't hard. And, you know, I think we put a little thought into, you know, trying to find little moments. Like, there's the thing, it's funny because the first thing everybody says when they saw the Scully art was, she has a necklace. Her mom gave her that necklace when she's 15. That's been established. And to be able to say, yes, we know. There is something going on here that you will find out later. But, you know, to work out little things like that, you know, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you know, but ultimately it's not a fan service story. The Scully is an exploration of faith, and it's an exploration of sort of, you know, what happened to her at such a young age that prepared her for the X-Files.
Yeah.
And set her on the path towards the X-Files, much as the Mulder story does the same thing. And I think it was important to both of us that Mulder starts out as a skeptic in his book.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and Scully is just at the point where she's in her first issue, where she's beginning to question her faith. So they kind of start off in very different places than when we first see them in the show. The thing about Scully that I find so fascinating is just simply, she's a woman of enormous faith and also of great scientific knowledge.
Yeah.
And that tension and that dichotomy to me is really, really fascinating. And hopefully, you know, that's something that people are going to pick up on in the comic. Yeah, there's a point at which the plot takes over and you're just trying to find out, you know, what's going on. But that there's still that layer to the Scully story of, you know, sort of her dealing or not dealing with what is going on with her faith.
I think that really comes out in the first issue, you know, in the idea that when you see at the crime scene, and she's looking at these things as the outsider, and you're seeing these detectives there who are doing their thing, and she's watching this. You see immediately that interest, that level of, you know, in your head you're going, well, she'll be those guys in, you know, 20 years or whatever. And it's really interesting, and the fact that it's a religious person that's been, you know, has been killed, again, it really felt very connected to Scully. It felt very real to Scully, and it was, I think it was a really good choice in terms of that. And it was funny how in the same month we've had two stories in the X-Files comics that have linked to Scully's childhood as well. That was just an unusual coincidence with Ishmael.
Oh, I'm sure that was totally an unusual coincidence. And not planned by Denton Tipton at all.
Planned at all.
No. I mean, Denton, to Denton's credit, I mean, you know, there's a lot of things about this, the Origins project, that are things where Denton called me up and was like, hey, what would you think about this? And you go, that's genius. How did I think about it? I mean, the flip book, to do the print edition as a flip book is genius. And that's all Denton. That was his idea. I wish I could take credit for that. You know, and then to release the chapters digitally, and then so you go back and forth between Mulder chapter and then a Scully chapter, and then at the end of 4 weeks, the fifth week is, you know, the printed edition, which is actually really, really smart. That was also Denton's idea. I mean, you know, he's a good friend, but he's also a really good editor, and he's very good on story. So we sort of send him a breakdown of what the plot for each chapter and each issue is going to be, and he, you know, he really gets into it and is like, well, how about this? And you're like, oh yeah, that's actually way better. You know, but there's actually been very little of that on this. He's for the most part, I think we haven't had too many things that he thought didn't quite work. There's actually one thing, and I don't want to spoil anything, but you know, she does investigate the death of her teacher, but in her own kind of kid way. And you know, Denton kept saying Nancy Drew, kept talking about Nancy Drew. So we actually kind of make that part of her ongoing internal monologue, is like a 13-year-old's idea of what a detective does, which is kind of fun. But it's not a normal 13-year-old kid. It's Dana Scully.
Yeah.
She knows that Nancy Drew, that's not how detectives really work. So it's been really interesting. But, he'll come up with little suggestions that either, you know, fix a problem or, like, spark off a really interesting idea. And kind of, I have to give, you know, his credit, you'll find out what ends up happening with the necklace and what is going on with the necklace and what our plan for it is. Like, that was Denton catching in some of the original art from the artist on Scully, Corinne Howell, who's just fantastic. She had drawn the cross on Dana, and Denton said, "Oh, you know, you can't have the cross yet, because, like I said, we know." And then Denton and I got talking and said, "But what if we?" And then it was like, we're just off. We're like, "Oh yeah, we're doing that. Like, we're totally doing that." You know, so it was like a total mistake that we were just going to have the artist fix real quickly, and then said, no, wait, there's an emotional opportunity there.
Yeah.
And let's use that to add another layer to the story. I mean, this is why I like writing more than art. Because you can have those little moments where you just, like, we didn't plan that, but once we saw the error, we took advantage of it. To make something better. It's like, you know, when you're drawing, you're like, oh, that doesn't really look like Dana, let me fix that eye. So anyways,
It sounds like a really collaborative project in terms, you know, you're talking about how Denton's involved and Corinne Howell, obviously Jodie Hauser, and it sounds great in that it's a real team. It sounds like a real team effort putting it together.
Absolutely. Well, we have a fantastic team. We also have Chris Finolio, who's drawing the Mulder chapters. And then we have Monica Cabina, who's coloring Corinne, who just does a fantastic job. And our letterer, Desi, whose name I do not know because I'm a horrible, horrible team member. But no, it's very much a team effort. I mean, that's, I often say, that's the thing about comics, is that you, as a medium, is that it is a team effort, that you the results of the team working together are better than anything we could do on our own. And it's more interesting, and we have a chance to sort of vibe off of what each other is doing. On the regular book, you know, with Denton overseeing us, with Joe, and with Jordy Belair on colors, who's just, she's just fantastic. And, you know, it's a good little team, and we work very well together. And I think the final results are far better, because of the fact that the we're three people who are working off of each other. And it's no one saying this is the way it has to be. It's, ooh, I like that thing that Jordy did on last issue. So actually, one of the reasons why I draw a lot of things with a lot of sky visible is that Jordy does really cool skies.
Yeah.
So, you know, I will show the sky a lot more than I normally would, because I hate drawing clouds. Clouds are terrible to draw. but I just leave them blank, and then Jordy will go in and just do these amazing colors. But that last issue of season 11, there was a lot of stuff in there where I just said, okay, I'm going to leave this for Jordy, and told Jordy, go nuts, do whatever you want to do. And she did. And it looked great. And, you know, you can't do that unless you've got a good team.
Yeah.
Built up. And you know, I mean, just the email chains between the team are hilarious. So there's a lot of sending of GIFs and various internet memes to mock each other. But we developed that very quickly on the X-Files Origins Project 2, you know, where everybody was working really, really well together. And amusingly, the artist on Mulder, Chris, lives not far from me.
So
we've seen each other a few times, and you know, is just a nice guy. So, you know, it's good, and it's a nice way to do it.
Yeah,
you know, comics is a really weird way to make a living. So to be surrounded by people who, you know, are enjoying the work and are enjoying who you enjoy working with is really nice.
Well, I was going to ask you, one of my last questions was going to be,
sure,
in terms of being a comic book artist, and you've probably been asked this many times, but for anyone listening to this who loves comics and wants to be you, wants to do what you do, what's the best advice, really? Because it is something with things like, if any creative kind of area, people always wonder how they can do it, how they can get there.
It's different. Everybody comes into the industry in a different way. And, you know, it's kind of hard to tell somebody, you know, I always get the question, how did you break in? And I tell people how I broke in. I broke in by basically meeting people. But, you know, and that's always true. It's networking. But it's more complicated than that, and it's different for everybody. The thing I say now is, here's the thing about the comic book industry now. If you've got a computer and you can make a comic book, you can finish the comic book, you can put out a comic book.
Yeah.
And that's something that I didn't have when I was coming up in the industry in the early 90s. Yeah, you could self-publish comics, but it was expensive, and it, you know, the logistics of it were really complicated. If you can make a comic book and get it on your computer, you can publish a comic book. Making a living doing it is a lot more complicated. But, you know, but that's true of everybody. That's true of you know, novelists, and even starting to be for filmmakers too. But if you can finish the work, you can put it out there, and it can be seen by people. And, you know, there are ways to build up an audience that I honestly don't understand, because I'm kind of the wrong generation. I'm kind of the old guard. You know, it's time. Guys like me will linger for a while, but we'll be replaced by the young guys. You know, but you can do a comic, and that's incredible. Even things like lettering a comic book. Yeah, you could do it on your computer, but you couldn't. It was harder to make it look professional. Now it's very easy to make it look like a professional lettering job. You know, you can do all these things yourself. And I would recommend do it yourself, just to do it and to see how it works and learn how to do it. You know, just do something you like, finish it and get it out, and then move on to the another thing you like. Yeah. And, you know, I, as far as having a career goes, I don't know. It's a lot more complicated on that end, but you can do a comic book. And, you know, there's a Pollyanna-ish me, a side of me that just says, that's cool.
And yeah, yeah.
I think that's amazing that people can do that now. And do it. And, you know, we'll figure out how to make money off of it later.
Indulge the passion first, and then, yeah, if it comes.
Yeah, I mean, just to finish stuff. I mean, yeah. That's the big thing. You know, I do writer's workshops too, because I write prose and starting to write prose and trying to get better. So I do a lot of these writer's workshops. And I think the very first one I did, David Morrell, who created Rambo, wrote the book First Blood. You know, the writing workshop, he stood up and basically said, you all have done what 90% of people who want to be writers haven't done. You've finished something. And, you know, I think there's something to that. Now, the trick is you got to finish the next thing, and it's got to be better than the last thing. But, you know, that is all possible now. And so, you know, if you're interested in comics, do it. And honestly, at this point, you know, having something finished starts to bring attention to yourself. And that's, you know, online, you know, tweeting those things out, putting those things on Facebook, having your own website, all that stuff that I don't understand because I'm 45. You know, those are the things that are starting to get attention. So just, you know, do it, keep doing it. Prepare yourself that you may never make a dime on it, but enjoy the process, enjoy finishing something, and just keep doing it.
I think that's great advice. And it would apply to, like you say, prose, to writing books, anything like that. It's good advice, definitely. My final question then is one I ask everyone on the X-Cast at the very end, and it's a simple one. So, Matthew, do you believe in the paranormal?
I don't, actually.
Oh!
I actually don't.
You're Scully.
I am Scully. I would be... Well, I mean, if I saw a giant flying saucer in front of me, I'd be like, well, that's a little weird. No, I don't. And if you, which is very funny, because if you read any of the things that I've written for myself, like The October Girl, they're all about gods and supernatural and strange creatures. And I don't believe in those things. Now, I'm not a jerk. It's possible. Those things are all possible. And if I saw something, I would be like, okay, well, we should probably find out if that is a guy in a suit or not. But no, I actually don't. So it's which makes it sort of interesting.
You'd be surprised how many people on this show who love the X-Files don't believe in the paranormal.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, it's the most common answer. And I suppose in some respects, it makes sense, because unless you've actually experienced something or seen something, you know, you can still be interested in it without having to believe it yourself in the real world. But yeah, it is interesting when people say, nope, don't believe
it. I'm sort of surprised by that. I mean, because I remember the climate that sort of brought the X-Files into being. I remember the sort of the conspiracy theory climate of the 90s. And I remember, you know, this sort of resurgence of interest in supernatural and belief in the supernatural and Bigfoot and UFOs and all that stuff. I mean, that was a very real thing going on, at least in America at that time.
Yeah.
So like X-Files like made perfect sense that somebody would try to make a show that sort of explored that sort of stuff. But, you know, I always come to those things as a skeptic.
Yeah. Definitely Scully.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but Scully. Her hair is way better than mine. That's all I'm saying.
Her hair's better than everyone's.
It's so much fun to draw. I mean, it's such a great thing. So, yeah.
Well, thank you ever so much, Matthew, for coming on the show and talking about your career and your links to the X-Files and the great work you're doing on the comics, which genuinely I think we all love and Origins, and I've said this without just speaking to you, I thought it was fantastic, and I can't wait to read. Yeah, it was really great, and I can't wait to read. Is it 4 issues? Is there going to be any more than that? Is that how many we're getting?
That's an interesting question. It is, this story is designed to come to a conclusion of sorts in a very X-Files fashion. But no, we're hoping to do more. And I think if the interest is there, it is designed to maybe be a trilogy if the interest is there for them. And we certainly, you know, if someone says, hey, do you want to do more? It's not like we're going to say no.
Yeah.
But there's actually a game plan, and there are things that are kind of set up in this first miniseries that may become important later.
Ooh,
hopefully.
That's exciting.
Oh, I'm not messing around with this stuff, Tony.
Yeah, you know, you're long game. I like it. Long game.
Very long game.
Well, guys, you know how to make this work. If you want to see all these clues and hints, you need to go out there and buy this comic, okay? So, you know, make it happen. It's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. Where can people find out more about you then? Is there anywhere on Facebook, Twitter, online?
I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm fairly easy to find. It's always Matthew Dow Smith, D-O-W Smith. So,
excellent.
But not just Dow Smith, because that's my dad.
Okay. Yeah, make sure you get the Matthew. Yeah,
he'd be wondering why everyone was asking him about, like, you know, Scully's necklace. He's like, what's going on with Scully's necklace? My dad's like, who's Scully?
Who's Scully? What's this about?
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, yeah, definitely check out Matthew's stuff. It's not just the X-Files, obviously. He's involved in a range of different things, and he's got lots of different comics out there and some great work you need to go and check out, guys. So please do. You can find us, as ever, on Twitter at @X_cast. On Facebook at the XCast, and you can email us at the XFCast @gmail.com. You know, let us know what you think of the show, what you think of our show, the X-Files, anything you want to mail us X-Files related, do it, go for it. And we're on Libsyn. You can find all our episodes on there at the XCast.libsyn.com. So if you want to get any of our stuff. We'll be back again for more episodes and more interviews, hopefully. We've got a few in the pipeline, so... yeah, and Matthew, would you maybe you can come back on one day and
talk
some more X-Files.
Yeah, I hate talking about the X-Files.
Well,
it's just, you know, whatever.
You've dragged yourself through this admirably.
Yeah, I mean, it's just very, you know, it's rough. But no, I, you know, anytime, and thanks for having me on today. It's really been an absolute delight.
Oh, pleasure's mine. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. And
thank you.
We'll be back, guys. So until then, remember the immortal words. Trust no one.